Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, America, and good morning, world. Good morning, America, and good morning, world. I hope everybody is well and blessed, doing the best they can in their part of the planet, their piece of the planet. Hang on. Please hang on. Change is coming, and it's a wonderful and blessed thing. Let me start off by today's date is February the 16th in the year 2016. I want to thank everybody that comes out to listen to this broadcast or listens to my broadcast. Spread the word. We're growing. It's going to be a great and factual broadcast, and this is what we bring. We don't, try to, you know, cut things or hide things or inflate things or, you know, messages or anything like that. I just go out and do research, and I bring it back, and I deliver. And unfortunately and sadly, most people don't do their research. They just don't. They listen to CNN or Fox News or whatever, you know, type of broadcast. They'll give their slant and their story, and away they go. They run with it. And it's often misguiding or misleading, sometimes intentionally, some unintentionally. There are slants, you know, there are media slants and things of that nature, you know, given to the American people and to the to people around the world. And so what we do and what I do is go back and do research and find, you know, bits and nuggets and things of that nature that will help prove and dispel these inaccuracies, whether they be intentional or unintentional. Now, I came back and done, this is the U.S. Constitution and Jesus Part 2. And mainly and basically this is about Mr. Ted Cruz being eligible to become a U.S. president. A president in this great United States. And the reason I'm, you know, taking the time and effort, and trust me when I say that I'm thoroughly tired. I've been up all night researching and debating and different things like that. But it's because I don't want this candidate, I don't want anyone for that matter to go any further than necessary or required or any further than they need to if they're not eligible to become a president or whatever they're pursuing to do. Eligibility is everything. And Mr. Trump says that he will file a lawsuit if need be. I believe that, and I believe that he's truly on to something here. It's kind of interesting because there is an untruth here. There certainly is an untruth, and I found this article. It's by Katherine Thompson. And it was published on January the 8th of 2016. It's a TPM article. And it's kind of amazing. In what they have here. And you can certainly go and read the article for yourself. Because there's a document and obtained by this group in 2013 that lists Canadian citizens eligible to vote in 1974. And, of course, Mr. and Mrs. Cruz, you know, lived in Canada prior to that date and time. It is known that Ted Cruz was actually born in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, in 1970. Okay. A lot of people say that Mrs. Cruz was a dual citizen at that particular point in time, was also a citizen of the United States. Now, this document pretty much nullifies that particular offering by Mrs. Cruz or anyone for that matter. And simply because in order for a person to be eligible to vote in Canada prior to 1977, they had to renounce, you know, their former citizenship. And you have to kind of bear with me this morning as I kind of stumble through these things. Okay. Now, I'm going to read this little piece here on dual citizenship as it pertains to Canada, the country of Canada. And like I say, we're going to kind of take it slow this morning because, for one, I'm very, very tired. And for two, I want to, you know, take my time to pull this information out as I, you know, as I compile it. Now, this is the Canadian Citizenship Act and Current Issues. And this was prepared by Ms. Margaret Young, Law and Government Division, in October of 1997. And it was revised in August of 1998. Okay. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump down here to the dual citizenship. Because this is what's key here. This is a key piece of information in regards to Mr. Ted Cruz's eligibility to become president. I don't want this to go, you know, down the line and then find out that this guy is ineligible, and we have to do a bunch of reversing, you know, lawsuits and all this other kind of stuff that will reverse, you know, his candidacy, and you know, if he were to actually become, you know, president of the United States. I certainly wouldn't want this to, you know, get in the way of that if it is, you know, legal. And by this information here, we have an illegality, okay? Okay, and I'm going to read from here, and this is Section F, as it pertains to dual citizenship. As noted, changes introduced by the Act, the 1977 Act, permit dual citizenship. Okay, we can look at that sentence right there. Because prior to 1977, dual citizenship was not accepted in the country of Canada. Now, I found some little tidbits and pieces where, you know, they created an exception. And I think that they have done this simply because of what's at stake right here and right now. And they've thrown some little bits and pieces in there that really don't apply. And the reason I say that is because this particular document, it covers, you know, all of those gray areas and gray spaces. It's pretty cut and dry and straightforward. Okay. And it clearly says, as noted, changes introduced by the 1977 Act permit dual citizenship. Before that time, Canadians who voluntarily acquired another citizenship, except by marriage, lost their Canadian citizenship. Okay, all right. Until 1973, the regulations had also required applicants for citizenship to renounce their former citizenship, although whether that renunciation was legally effective depended upon the law of the former homeland. Okay, so that would be the law of the United States. Now, the United States does recognize dual citizenship, okay? But the key thing here is Canada did not. They did not recognize it. They did not accept dual citizenship prior to 1977, because that's what this the act of 1977, revised, which would allow dual citizenship. Okay. So prior to that time, they had to renounce their citizenship, although whether or not, okay, we already at home. Now, with the government asked, when the government asked the Standing Committee to provide advice to the government in 1994, it did not highlight the issue as one that needed addressing, nor has it done so since. So pretty much it was a cut and dry, a moot point, because it said what it said and it enforced what it enforced. Anyone born prior to 1977 could not hold a dual citizenship in the country of Canada. Okay. Let's see. Okay, and it even goes on to read. Nevertheless, during its hearings, the committee agreed with a number of witnesses who questioned the meaning of loyalty and allegiance, where people hold dual or multiple citizenship, and suggested that such a policy devalues the meaning of Canadian citizenship. For this and other reasons, the committee recommended that the government explore the possibility of reinstating the former rules, okay, so that an adult, a Canadian citizen who voluntarily and formally acquired the citizenship of another country would cease to be a Canadian citizen. In other words, they're talking about reversing the Act of 1977 that, disallowed dual citizenship. They're talking about going back to that particular policy and law in the country of Canada. So if they're going back to that, if they're considering going back to that, that means they have to reverse it or change it so that a person could hold dual citizenship after 1977. But prior to that time, you couldn't vote in the country of Canada unless you were a Canadian citizen. Now, we're gonna go into this TPM document because this is some really, really good stuff here. Let's see. Let's see here. Okay, let me go down here. Okay, they started not to okay. They started not to publish this document, but eventually decided not to publish the article based on the document at the time, in part because Cruz was not yet a candidate for president. But then they decided to revisit the story earlier this week as rival Donald Trump renewed his skepticism about Cruz's eligibility, moving the story to the center of the campaign, and was prepared to publish this to be published. Then, okay, let me just go on and read. Then late Friday afternoon, this Breitbart.com published an article about the same document TPM did, shared with Cruz's office in 2013. A voter list for the Southern District of Calgary, alongside a lengthy exclusive statement from the Cruz campaign. Jason Johnson, Cruz's chief campaign strategist, said in the statement that the candidate's mother was never a citizen of Canada. Okay, he says, quote, and I quote, "was never a citizen of Canada." Now, there's no way that she could have voted without being a citizen of Canada. Their vetting process is pretty straightforward, but we're going to jump into that. He added that she could not have been born or could not have been a Canadian citizen at the time that her son was born because of residency requirements. Eleanor Cruz was born in Delaware, while her ex-husband, Rafael Cruz, was born in Cuba, obtained a Canadian citizenship while living in Calgary and became a naturalized U.S. citizen in the mid-2000s. Okay, so Mr. Cruz actually obtained Canadian citizenship. And like I said before, you know, anything prior to 1977, you could not hold a dual citizenship and additionally vote in the country of Canada. The document in question is a voter list of individuals who live in the Southern District of the City of Calgary who were over the age of 18 and were Canadian citizens, thus eligible to vote. In accordance with the Canadian Election Act, which lists were compiled in the 1970s by a pair of officials called enumerators, who actually went from door to door together in electoral district to ascertain the name, address, and occupation of any person qualified to vote, any and every person qualified to vote. The statute states that enumerators who willfully and without reasonable excuse added a name to the list of any person who is not entitled to have his name entered thereon. And if they did, they would forfeit pay for their services and were subject to other punishments. In other words, this was a serious position, and they had to be truthful about their collection of information and data and names of that and that nature. Another election official called a returning officer then reviewed the list. The statute states that the returning officer could not certify the document if he believed the list contained the name of any person who shouldn't be included. The document obtained was certified in Calgary by the returning officer. In 2013, a Canadian election official told TPM that in the process of compiling the list, enumerators asked people to affirm that they were Canadian citizens. So when they knock on the door, they would ask the people in the homes, first question, are you a Canadian citizen? Second question, are you 18 years of age or older? Third question, and are you a resident in this facility, and how long have you been living here? Folks, this is the nail in the coffin right here. These questions were asked to the Cruises and were responded for positively so that it allowed them to vote in that, I think it was 1974 election. Okay, now Drew Westwater, the director of the Election Operations and Communications for Elections Alberta, told TPM if they meet all the requirements, then they add them to the list. Take their name, their address, and anyone else living there, and they ask, is anyone else living here a Canadian citizen, 18 years of age or older? And if they are, then they took their names as well at the door. And that's the way it worked in those days, quote, unquote. Okay? The name Raphael, and they do post this list on this particular website here, the Raphael and Eleanor Cruz listed on the document clearly appear to be Cruz's parents. The spelling of Cruz's father's name is italicized or anglicized to Raphael, okay, rather than the correct spelling Raphael. And his occupation is listed as self-employed at the time. The Cruises worked in the oil industry running a seismic data processing business. Okay, it said that he was self-employed, and the Cruises worked in the oil industry running a seismic data processing business. That's self-employment, folks. To confirm the Cruise identity, TPM also cross-referenced the address listed for the couple on the Southern District voter list with Calgary City Directories for the years 71 through 74. Okay. Most of the directories listed, the Cruz is living at the Northwest Calgary residence where it's been reported that Ted Cruz was born. This is where he was born, folks. They lived there. They were voting. They were on the voters list. They voted. They were asked a series of legal binding questions in regards to their citizenship to the country of Canada. If they were to reply or respond in the negative, they would not have been added to these lists. Simple, factual information. The address listed for the couple in the 1973 city directory matched the address to the one in 1974 voters list, and further listed both Cruises as executives of the data processing firm. They owned a company there. They were self-employed. They were residents there. Ted Cruz was born there. They were operating a business as Canadian citizens, voting. Now, you know if they were citizens, now you know if they were business owners in that country, that they had a vested interest to vote to the direction of the country because they were business people there. This is just the nature of businessmen and women. According to the phone books, from 71, 72, 73, Cruz's parents were the only individuals with the surname Cruz living in Calgary. So there's no confusion there, folks. They're the only names with the surname Cruz living in Calgary. They were Cuban-born, Cuban people. They were a Cuban person living in Calgary. That stands out like a sore thumb. Okay, let's see. Okay, it doesn't say, like I said, it goes on to say, it doesn't say that they were, you know, about them being eligible to vote and all this other kind of stuff. And you can dim or dissipate the facts, you know, in and around that. But what the clincher for me is when the election official came to the door. And ask those series of questions, you see. And they do show up, the Urban Polling Division is number 121, Urban Preliminary List of Electors and Voters in the City of Calgary, Canada. They are on that list. They appear on the list. Now, the only way that they could get on this list, because the officials would have suffered severe punishment for perjury, lying or telling untruths or collecting their names in a false manner. And when they were asked those series of questions, are you a Canadian citizen? And they responded, yes. That seals the deal for me. Because if nobody knew that they were Canadian citizens, they sure knew. They voted. Ted Cruz was born at that residence. The only way you could get Canadian citizenship at that time was to renounce the country from whence you came. They went through that process, folks. Donald Trump has something here. He has something. And if he does decide, there's other lawsuits that's pending on Mr. Cruz. And he really needs to just go ahead and fess up, because the waters are going to be, you know, muddy and messy and murky, you know, and it's going to be a thorn in the Republican Party's side, you know, as he continues to move forward. Even if he becomes the nominee, I mean, it's just going to be horrible. messy, you know, and it will not go forward. So that's why I felt compelled to come back and do this broadcast today. So we can once and for all move forward, move on. And now I understand that Mr. Cruz, you know, generates a lot of publicity, a lot of, you know, news revenues and things of that nature. But folks, we have to come to a point where we draw the line and let the facts prevail. It is what it is. And Mr. Cruz, you know, he did a lot of things to try to, you know, just a few years back, because he knew of this issue or this problem here, of his ineligibility, and he tried to, you know, gain his citizenship and all these other type of drastic things, you know, this here years ago, so that hoping that, you know, this would kind of, you know, go away. But, you know, here it is. So anyhow, that's that in that regard. Let's see, I'm missing anything. Okay, so we talked about, we already talked about President Obama. Now, I had a debate last night on the appointment with Judge Scalia. And as the Constitution reads, and I'm just doing this from memory, I took it down, but the president can appoint, you know, a person. Now, the word nominate does not appear, as I recall, in the Constitution. Okay? So the president, by legal authority, he has the right to appoint the new Supreme Court justice. Now, it is upon the Senate and other members, you know, to confirm, because the Constitution reads to advise and confirm his selection or his appointment to bring them in as a full-fledged sitting member of the Supreme Court. Now, I think Orrin Hatch was on today, and I mean, this is sounding so silly. That's not the word I really want to use, but I'll use silly. For them to even consider this president or President Obama to hold off and wait until the next president is elected and, you know, of this appointment. Why would he even consider waiving his executive power or his executive authority as commander in chief to make this, to, you know, and hold off this appointment? That doesn't even make any sense. And I don't foresee him doing anything of that nature. I think that he is looking for somebody right now to submit that appointment. And it's amazing. I mean, you know, and I try to stay unbiased, you know, in politics. I try to stay apolitical. But, you know, when you do things that are really kind of way out in left field, it's real hard to, you know, stay right down the middle. Yeah. Now, it says I got 60 seconds, so love one another, take care of one another. It's the right thing to do, is what God wants us to do, simply because God is love. But I'm going to keep talking because I think I got a few more minutes. But anyhow, I don't know what it is for them, you know, for Orrin Hatch to ask, you know, the president. And a lot of people think that he should hold off the appointment until the next president. Now, the next president is probably going to be, you know, more than likely Hillary Clinton, because Donald Trump has done a masterful work over there on the Republican side to tear down the top contenders. That's what he's there for, folks. Look and listen. Look and listen. Do some history, and you'll see, you know, what his objective truly is. For President Obama to hold off on an appointment, I just don't, it's not in his nature, his character, and it is well within his authority to make that appointment, and I suspect that he will do so. He said in due time, but I think that he's got somebody, you know, that he's going to put up there real soon. And it's going to be really, really silly for the Republicans to hold, you know, to not confirm this individual based on the political, you know, posturing. To hold this off, you know, to hold, like this guy says, to hold the nation hostage, you know, for such a period of time because of political, you know, posturing. This is nonsense. This is preposterous, you know, for them to even consider that, you know. It's another black eye, you know, for the Republican mindset and following. I think I touched on George W. Out there campaigning and stuff for his little brother, Jeb, which is cute, nice, and but, you know, he's just really not there. He's just really not, you know, as presidential as GWB. You can just look at the two, you know, and you can see what I'm talking about. So, you know, look at their mannerisms and things of that nature. You know, one is clearly presidential and one clearly is not. I wanted to touch a little bit because I said, you know, I put Jesus in. I kind of didn't have time yesterday to go into this, but I'm going to be real brief with this for now. But if you notice in the Bible, in Revelation, and I don't have my Bible with me right now, but Revelation speaks of a depiction or a description of the one we call Jesus. Oh, and that movie Risen, I seen it on the 700 Club today. They're doing a promotion on it on the 700 Club. It's kind of interesting because on normal broadcasting, you know, when they run it, like, say, for instance, one of the normal cable channels, they repeatedly say the name Yeshua over and over again. Yeshua, Yeshua, Yeshua. You heard me say that name, Yeshua ben Joseph. If you just go on to your Google, just Google Yeshua ben Joseph and Yeshua ben Mary, you're going to be pretty amazed about what comes up. And click on images. And that will confirm and let you know who that individual is. Now, in Revelation, he says, it reads, eyes of fire, hair white, and as of lamb's wool. And you can look up, you know, some lamb's wool and see what it looks like on a blonde, you know, sheet. And feet look like a fine brass that has been burnt in a furnace. Now, if you burn fine brass, if you burn brass in a furnace, it's going to oxidize and turn black. That's all it is to it, you know. Now, who this individual is in the Bible up until 1970 and all these pictures of people, these Greek, you know, figures and figurines and people in the Bible, they are different people. I mean, they are different people of the Greek-Roman time. But none are the actual Hebrew Israelite or Nazarene people of that day and time. Now, Christine Amanpour has searched all over the place looking for Jesus. She's found nothing. She, you know, it's inconclusive. They call him man, myth, or something else, something else. But if you go into your computer and Google Apollonius of Tyana, Apollonius, Apollonius of Tyana, you'll find that individual that's depicted in the Bible with the straight hair, the blue eyes, and the porcelain skin. Apollonius of Tyana, he's an ancient Greek Neo-Pythagorean philosopher from the town of Tyana in the Roman province of Cappadocia or something like that in Anatolia, being a first century orator and philosopher around the time of Jesus. He was compared with Jesus of Nazareth by Christians in the fourth century and other writers in modern time. Okay, so obviously, there were two people. It was him and this person that they called Jesus, but they flipped the script is what they have done. Because the description of Yeshua in the as the Bible stands is a dark skin or a black skin person, feet that look like they have been burnt in a furnace. You see, there's a conflict here. There's certainly a conflict here. Now Apollonius was born into a respected and wealthy Greek family. Although the precise dates of his birth and death are uncertain, most scholars agree that he was a contemporary of Jesus of Nazareth. Okay, his primary biographer, Philostratus, or some, the Elder, circa 170 to 247, places him in circa 3 BC to circa 97 AD, or after the death of Christ. Now, if you look at some of the research books, you'll find that Constantine wrote about a person that lived 100 years after the one they call Christ, okay, which is, this is the individual Apollonius here. And you can go on to read a little, you know, read more stuff about this, you know, his life and comparison to Jesus and, you know, the similarities shared by Apollonius and Jesus, birth miraculously announced by God, religiously precarious as a child, asserted to be a native speaker of Aramaic, influenced by Plato, wore long hair and robes, was unmarried and childless, was anointed with oil, went to Jerusalem, spoke in metaphor, saw and predicted the future, performed miracles, healed the sick. This is that guy. This is him right here. We're going to do a lot more research on bringing forth this truth because it's about healing, folks. And it's about the truth making us all free. It doesn't say setting us free as in physical bondage, but it's setting us free as in mental and spiritual bondage. And I talked to a scholar, a biblical scholar, a while back, and he confirmed this, right? I mean, this guy is far right. He's a Caucasian friend, and he's far right. And when I told him and recited this to him, he said, yeah, it's the truth. It is what it is. But that's not going to change my belief. And I just wanted to, I embraced him, I hugged him, because, you know, this is something that's been really bothering me over the years, is that when this truth starts to come to light and be shared and spread amongst humanity, will he be embraced as much and with much vigor as he was when people thought he was a Caucasian person? And that was just, it was a awe moment for me. It was a wonderful, wonderful moment. And I just embraced him, you know, because he's very deep. He's very, very deep. He's read the Bible probably at least a dozen times. He's just, you know, a heck of a guy. And I like debating and talking with him on a number of subjects. But when he said this and comfortably said it, you know, it was huge. You know, now he doesn't know anything about, you know, Apollonius yet, but I'm going to share this with him. I've known this for 30 some years, folks, and I'm not trying to date myself or anything like that. But it's time for the truth to come to light. You know, and because we are all one big human family. You know, I've proven that. And I can prove it through the blood. Simply, you know, go and look at a little clip on the internet called "The Journey of Man" by Spencer Wells. The blood doesn't lie. You know, we're just different shades. We're all one family, one human family. We're just different shades because of the melanin or the color content of our skin. That's it. That's the only thing that divides us. You see, and our ideology, our ways of thinking, you know, which we have to reverse that, you know, in the name of God, because he is our Father, one for one and all. You know, say, that's how we get to on earth as it is in heaven. His will be done. You can best believe in heaven there is no separation, and you know, he favors all his children. Watch that movie, 90 seconds, no, 90 minutes in heaven. You know, it's a nice little clip. It's very believable. And we got to get there, folks. You know, so anyhow, that's my broadcast for today. And like I always say in signing off, love one another. Take care of one another. It's the right thing to do. It's what God wants us to do, simply because God is love, and love is what binds us all. And until the next broadcast, take care for now, and so long.